Like I'll send you a screenshot when I'm off the call. But on the new iOS, you can have a background which is like the Earth, and it shows your location on it. And so I've slowly seen that Earth like rotate, you know. And now I can't see the UK anymore on that. Like I'm a long way from home.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Gravel Junction podcast, your meeting place for all things bikes, adventures, and the stories that follow. I'm your host, Charles Dedmer. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Gravel Junction podcast. As always, thank you for joining us. I need to be honest, this is about my fourth or fifth attempt at recording this outro. It's Monday the 24th in the afternoon, 2 days after a rather big gravel ride in the Kent countryside, and I'm clearly still feeling the effects. My brain is mush. That's right, on Saturday, myself and a few friends were out in the countryside for the Brothers Cycles Biggin event, or the Biggerin in our case, the 150-kilometre, 2,300-metre course, which I'm going to go out on a limb and say was one of the most challenging courses I've ever done. Maybe because it's the longest ride I've done in a very long time. Probably also due to the very sticky conditions. I'm talking peanut butter mud. And then the climbing, just punch after punch, 1 to 300 meter long climbs at 10 to 20% gravel, just chunky course. And it never stopped right until the end, right until that last gate about 2 kilometers from the finish. There was mud and climb after climb. Many a curse word was uttered, but at the same time, a lot of laughs, a lot of fun, beautiful route. Would definitely do it again, probably in drier conditions, but luckily on the day it wasn't raining, so that did make for a much better experience. And kudos to the Brother Cycles team for the route. It really was something. But as I said, feeling the effects right now. I need to jump on the trainer, I think, and spin the legs a little bit, try and clear out the cobwebs. But we are here for a show. Today we have episode 2 of Webby Boru, our series following Boru McCullough on his round the world mind mapping bike ride. 7 weeks in, we caught up with Boru last week, just as he arrived in India, in Mumbai. India, after riding through Turkey with his very good friend Finlay Newmark. So as I say, 7 weeks in, this week he's already made quite a bit of progress through India, which you may have seen on his social media channels. So it was, as always, fascinating to catch up with Boru, to see where he is mentally, physically. I think he's turned a bit of an emotional corner now from the point of view of which we go into in the episode, but how far he is away from home now geographically. But I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, and I can't wait to kind of continue this series, because each time we sit down and chat, I am living vicariously through him on this journey that he's on, and hopefully you're doing the same. So let's get into it. Here's my conversation with Boru, and we'll catch you on the other side. Enjoy.
Hey, man.
How's it going?
Yeah, it's going well. How are you?
Yeah, good, man. Good. Yeah, it feels like it's been ages. You've gone some miles since we last spoke.
Yeah, it's so strange. Like, I was working out how many weeks it had been now since I left. And it's weird that it's only been 7 weeks. And it feels, yeah, like you say, it feels like so long since we've spoken. And it's also not long. It's just like so much has probably happened in both of our lives since then.
Exactly. In that time, it's weird how it blends into one. And I mean, it's a bit the world we live in now with social media. You get to kind of follow, but at the same time, you know, it's just a minute timestamp. And you know, when I saw those photos or the footage of Cappadocia, I was just like,
yeah,
I couldn't even imagine. So I mean, where did we last speak? You were in that little hotel.
We last spoke just after my first rest day before heading into the Balkans, and yeah, that was above that disco in Bosnia with not great Wi-Fi and lots of noise, and a lot of me fidgeting. I didn't have earphones last time because they were broke. The mic was broken. But
I seem to remember you saying something like that in your post, that one of your mics was broken.
But I got new earphones. I promised not to fidget with my phone.
Well, man, it was still one of my most popular downloads, so no problem. I think people appreciated the Balkan authenticity of the location.
I've turned off the AC and fan, and there's you can probably still hear the beeping outside though. There's so much of it here. And here is Mumbai, is where I'm at the moment.
I was going to say, so you're right now, you're in Mumbai, made the trek over to India, and we'll kind of fill in the gaps now. But overall, how are you feeling 7 weeks in?
It's so easy to get comfortable not cycling is how I feel. Like, you know, it's been, I think it's only been about 3 days since I've ridden, because we kind of had a day in Kayseri, which was the city where Finley and I stopped in Turkey before, you know, to pack the bikes up. Next day, it was full of flights, and now I've been here for 2 days. And it's like, yeah, I need to get a move on. I need to get back on my bike, because it's just, it's so easy to be stationary. And
I was thinking, going, right, there was a few parts of that for me. I could imagine that, like, that plane travel and all that almost seems like a real headache compared to the simplicity of just getting on your bike and riding.
Oh, it was horrible. Absolutely horrible.
Because, I mean, when we messaged, you were sleeping in that little restaurant at the airport. I mean, hours you were staying there. We'll talk about that now. But like, the stresses of packing your bike up, checking, rechecking, like, how were you dealing with all that?
It was very helpful to have Finley there to give me confidence that I was packing it in the right way, because he had to do that to come over. So I was kind of like, will this be okay? And he was like, no, you know, don't put your cassette that way, put it this way, put your wheels this way. So it was such a huge help to just to have, like, someone there to reassure you, because that's something that I've never done before, you know, pack a bike in a cardboard box and taking that on a plane.
Yeah, to parts of the world that generally are not known for, you know, they're cycling, and so might not be as careful with the box.
and that bike and everything is inside it is my home, you know, which is also something that no one will be able to kind of, like, comprehend in that way. That if it gets damaged, like, that's like game over. That's
real ramifications. Serious.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that was quite stressful, but we had the help of an amazing bike shop in Kayseri. And they, you know, we washed our bikes there. They gave us the bike boxes. They were really, they were really helpful. They let us keep our bags and bikes there again. You know, so we're all on the same side, cyclists, you know, so everyone always helps each other out, which is so, so appreciated.
Well, I'm, from what I've seen so far since we last spoke, it seems like you've had a number of those sort of experiences or encounters with perfect strangers. And the one that comes to mind is the Welshman you met in Turkey, and the experience you had with him. I mean, tell us a little bit about that. I mean, that was, so you, so just to back up a bit, we spoke, you're in Bosnia, you then went through Montenegro. Did you go into Albania, or was it straight into Bulgaria?
Yeah, I didn't stick to our original route, because, you know, Finley and I decided what date we were going to meet in Istanbul. And I said, all right, I'm going to get a move on. And it was still probably equidistance the route, but I just made more of a beeline and had a few quite long days to make it. So after Bosnia, it was Bosnia, Montenegro, and then I went into Kosovo, North Macedonia, Bulgaria, and then into Istanbul from there, into Turkey from there.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it must have been lovely to have seen Finley, like, a good friend after all that time, like, place like Istanbul, just to kind of catch your breath a little bit, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was so good. And we both had that point planned for so long that, you know, it was great to have that unwind. And then really before long, we were like, God, we've got to just hit the road. And we had to start riding and start experiencing it's Turkey. And Turkey is an incredible place. It's so special.
Yeah, I mean, I've probably spent about 6 to 8 months in total in Turkey, but only on the coast. So a lot of Göcek, Marmaris, But never been to Istanbul, never been inland. So yeah, it seems like you certainly, because you changed your route a little bit there as well, didn't you, to kind of head down more towards the coast?
Yeah, so because originally the plan was to cycle from Istanbul all the way across the country to the eastern border with Iran.
Yes.
And
yes,
deciding not to go to Iran was a tough decision and also a good decision. And that meant that we kind of had some other parts of the country that we could play with. So we actually got a bus down to Izmir, which is kind of in the southeast, to just cut out some of the really horrible roads. Like cycling into Istanbul, I've never felt so fearful for my life on a bike. It was just horrible. It was
I can imagine. Like I've even in some of the Turkish towns and cities I've been in, it's like some of the South American cities where it's a free-for-all. Traffic lanes mean nothing. It's just, it's anarchy or seeming anarchy for someone who's not used to it.
Yeah, but it's just, there's no small roads in, right? It's such a bottleneck between Europe and Asia that you have all these like insanely busy highways full of trucks, you know, just transporting goods and people just like absolutely sending it through there. And, you know, at some point I was just, I think it was like 3 or 4 lanes wide. And I was just like, I really shouldn't be here. So we decided to skip that on the kind of Asian side of Istanbul and just get a bus down to Izmir.
Okay, so that was where I saw you guys were kind of packing up in the bus. I mean, that in itself, did you just kind of put the bike's hull into the bus and then hope for the best?
Yeah, like we kind of had two really good sources of information. Finley got in touch with a guy called Igor, I think is his name, who'd bikepacked Turkey. And I don't know how we first got in touch with this guy called Nikasi, I think is how you say his name. But like, we're still messaging him. He's like a great guy, super helpful. He's from Turkey. And he said, yeah, look, take your bikes on the bus. They just treat it as cargo, so they stick them underneath. So yeah, we treated it as cargo and put them underneath. But again, like it's so hard to, you know, convey the message that these bikes are, you know, delicate and there are parts that can, you know, like a mech hanger. How can you explain to someone who a bike is just something that they want to chuck underneath the bus that a mech hanger, if that gets bent and then you have to bend it back and then it's weak and then it's all this sort of stuff just doesn't make the translation. So we kind of had to be very specific in getting them in, and we tried our best to kind of take charge of that, which works on the first bus, didn't really work on the second bus.
I mean, as we said in the last time we spoke, like you and Finley, really good friends from way back, the dynamic as far as all that time you'd spent alone and now riding with someone, without being obvious, I understand it would be a different experience, but how did you experience that? Was it a welcome sort of relief?
Yeah, it was. But at the same time, there were challenges in that, you know, like finding a rhythm, you know, riding a month by yourself, you kind of get set in ways, and then that adjusts, you know, when you're with someone else. And
it's like living alone and then moving into an apartment with someone else, and they have different habits, right? And you do things a certain way, and it's trying to find that balance.
Yeah. And like, we know those with each other a lot, you know, we've ridden together a lot. We've been away together, you know, in Girona and stuff like that. But this was, yeah, it was different. You know, you're living life on the road with someone, and it was a challenge to just, yeah, kind of shift things to, yeah, make that as best as it can.
No,
but then,
sure.
the amazing thing was that suddenly I could like laugh about things with people, like with him, and like make jokes and, you know, discuss what we're doing and how it made each of us feel. And that was like so valuable.
Yeah, I can imagine that added a certain richness to the experience, being able to vocalize and externalize what was normally previously all just in your head.
Yeah, and if I'm honest, I did find that hard, like to vocalize that at first. And what I really value with mine and Finley's friendship is that we can kind of like talk about those things that you might otherwise like kind of hold inside, especially after spending so much time, you know, by myself, where I'm having constant conversation with myself, and it was hard to have this conversation with myself and then not voice them.
Sure. Interesting.
But it was so great though. Like, equally challenging, inspiring, daunting time, both in different ways as well. Like, we each took different things away from it, which I find natural, but also very interesting.
Yeah, it's one of those retrospectively, when you look back at certain parts of the trip, like, you'll see that that is one where it's like, it's a real bookmark in a way, isn't it? And the way, and what you guys were going through, like, as I said before, the Turkish Welshman that you came across and his generosity staying with him, and, you know, the experiences you had there, and his little donut and wheel spin when he left. I still love that film. And moving through. So again, I'm not sure if it's something you wanted to talk about now, but I remember you said previously that you and Finley were working on a bit of a project, which you may or may not be able to talk about in detail, but did you guys manage to kind of follow along with your sort of rough plan with that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just around like what mind mapping is. And then that experience of, you know, kind of Philly coming out to join to document what that kind of day-to-day experience is like. You know, the trials and tribulations, the good, the bad. And yeah, no, we did do that. We're very excited by it.
Well, that was my next question, is sort of, you're going to kind of play that by ear, or is it you're kind of solo for the next little while, and you might, I mean, you've got a lot of time. What's sort of the plans for the coming weeks, months, month or two?
I'll be solo for a good while. Okay. Like, we have ideas of where that might be, but realistically, it's definitely not going to be before the end of the year. And I'll make quite a lot of ground up by the end of the year.
Where do you expect to be Christmas wise? Do you think about it in that way, or is it sort of like, we'll see?
We'll see. I mean, like, I need to be out of my visa for India runs out on the just under a month, so on the 12th of November. After that, I'll be in Vietnam. I'll fly to Hanoi, and that will probably be like just over a month. So I'll probably be somewhere maybe Malaysia, Singapore, or like Perth. I don't think I'll be in Perth by that. Probably somewhere in Malaysia, I imagine, or Singapore.
It's quite interesting for me now, having this chat, and I was just kind of trying to put myself in your shoes a little bit, how you've been doing it long enough now that it's really become, in quotes, like your norm, so to speak, what you're doing right now. Like, how are you kind of articulating that as to, you know, this is kind of my day to day, this is my life. Do you find yourself from a homesick point of view, or it's just like, it's become very natural to what you're doing right now?
It's natural, but like, I miss home. I miss the track. There was I don't know if you read it, there was an article that came out the other day about Herne Hill and, you know, the kind of success of it with cycling. And like, I was reading it, and me and Finley were sat in this cafe as I was reading it, and it was making me like really quite emotional reading it, because I was like I really miss the place and the people and the community there. Mm. And the amazing thing is that when I did set out on this, I was kind of like, yeah, it's going to be an ultimate like reminder, or what's the word I want to use? Kind of like proving to myself that I can rely on myself and,
that's, you know, be so,
yeah, exactly. And the beautiful thing is that, like, I'm really not doing it by myself, and that, this kind of sounds really cheesy to say, but people are constantly messaging and replying to things, and I'm chatting to people, and it's really nice to still have that. Like, you know, it is one of the good things about social media. There's a lot of negatives to it, but the ability to keep in touch and talk with others that you miss about your day to day life is incredibly valuable.
For sure. I mean, I can, like, so me relatively new in London, and I've got a taste of that community feeling, especially in the cycling, and like this last weekend at Bespoked, meeting a lot of people who, you know, I'm sure very well through Herne Hill, et cetera. And then funny you mentioned Herne Hill, like Ruler Lives in a couple of weeks, and a couple of the guys from Herne Hill are actually doing a talk there about Herne Hill and what it's produced. But on the second part of that was also just how, like, to remind yourself regularly, and that's why I like the idea of us doing this chat every couple of weeks and all these people reaching out, is just like, how many people have you on their mind, like, day to day and social media, which must, you know, that's, because I can imagine we've all had those moments, whether on the bike or in life, where you kind of have those alone moments, but then to have, be able to tap into that knowing, going, you know, there's so many people like rooting and supporting you and on this adventure, I'm sure, be very helpful.
Yeah, that is the nice bit, but that does, like, kind of that happens with the nice bits, you know, and because that's kind of what goes on social media, and I find it harder to get the other parts across. Like, so something Finley said is that it's going to be so hard to convey how, like, tough the actual riding is. You know, you see all these, you know, you see Cappadocia that we put up, but, you know, the few days leading up to that, like, we were just, you know, really struggling. You know, you're coming up and you're like, oh, you know, we've got this massive climb up ahead. There's some days where, you know, I like, there was this one day I woke up in the morning, like, I couldn't push above 20k an hour on the flats. You know, my heart rate wouldn't lift above 105. You know, my body was just so exhausted. And, like, that's kind of those bits where you do feel, like, incredibly kind of trapped and lonely within that. You know, even, like, the flats over here, you know, paying to get your bike on it and then saying, all right, that'll be like $220. And you're like, shit. You know, you're just standing there alone in an airport in Dubai where you're trying to connect flights together because you booked individually, and you're just like, how did I end up here?
Yeah.
What on earth is going on?
I can imagine. I mean, traveling can be an exhausting experience, and then you throw in the physical detail of what you're doing now. So yeah, it's social media, so it's curated, right? It's the rose tinted glasses, and you see that. And you probably find, and maybe it's projecting, but as you go further into it, you'll start naturally showing both sides of it, not because that'll become, it's as equally as important as the good stuff, right? Because that's that whole yin yang part of it. It's those Cappadocia moments are made ever sweeter because of what you had to do to get there. But it doesn't, I mean, when you're alone on a bike in the middle of nowhere feeling that, it doesn't necessarily help to be thinking that.
Yeah, like even like looking at like my route kind of through India, it's like there's going to be, it's super flat, right, until this one section where I'm going to try and get to the Himalayas. And it was going to be a beautiful view afterwards, but literally like for 2 days beforehand, I'm climbing at like 6-7% just constantly for 2 days just to get to this like beautiful point.
The 30 kilogram rig underneath you, just trying to get up here.
I think it's more than 30, you know. I still haven't weighed it, but
probably don't. Maybe just don't do that.
30 kilos sounds like so light.
Yeah. I mean, how is the equipment all going for you? Any new firm favorites or thing? It's ticking along quite nicely.
Yeah, everything's going as it should. I replaced the tire. That was in Izmir just because I had this hole in it that I just wouldn't seal. And Finley and I rode like 16 kilometers across Istanbul, and it wouldn't hold. So the next day I kind of replaced that, but that's been the only thing.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. What are you expecting weather-wise now through India? Because you know, I'm trying to picture now. It's going to winter, so it shouldn't be as humid, right? You'd kind of planned it that way.
I mean, like, it's still so humid. It's ridiculous. Like, it's kind of fortunate timing of this whole thing, right? That I planned it very quickly so that I could chase summer across Europe. And then the plan was is that lands me in India, like, right after monsoon season, which it has, but it's still very humid. And with climate change, like, I've seen the effects of it so much on this ride, and I'm such a short way into it. So I think it was the day before yesterday, just like insane rains because it's the monsoon's basically lingering a little bit. The thing is that all shifts like south, moves south over the subcontinent. So as I ride north, I'll kind of push further and further away from that. And it'll get warmer, it'll still be muggy and humid, and then it'll start getting cooler, you know, as I head up north. Because the region I'll go is called Sikkim. It's basically nestled between Nepal and Bhutan. So it's proper, yeah, it's proper
high country up there. I mean, it's
where like Darjeeling is.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. I only know that. I think, is it a train?
The Darjeeling Express.
Yeah, that's why I knew. I saw the name on Google Maps and I was like, oh yeah, I may as well go there. I recognize it.
Where's Anderson Film as well, I believe.
Yeah,
So, I mean, climate-wise then, you're going to be hitting some pretty low temperatures, correct? Once you're up there, or what are you expecting? I'm just thinking from an equipment point of view, you're equipped for how the weather could change around there?
Yeah, like unintentionally equipped. You know, like it's going to be cold. It's not going to be ridiculous. Like now, like looking up this area, I'm going to be at the perfect time to go and see it, which is it's just pure chance. You know, the other pure chance is that it's Diwali next week. You know, it's New Year here, so the road and the streets are starting to get, you know, all lights and lit up, and there's going to be like massive celebrations. But sitting up there, like I brought my spats overshoes because I was expecting some pretty horrible rain at some point. They're also super warm. You know, I've got both Zoas. I've got the insulated one and the rain one. Mm, and with those on, like, you're practically indestructible by that point. So I do feel, you know, the only thing, it might be the legs, but I've got a pair of long johns. I can stick those over the top.
You, as you say, you just layer it on. You do what you need to, don't you, to sort of to get through it. And if you're moving, especially on the bike, you keep that core temperature. It makes a big difference. It was funny. Albion was obviously there at Bespoke this weekend and seeing all the gear there, and there was a little repair setup they had for people to. And it made me think of you going, I wonder how your gear's holding up. You know, just going through there. It's the ultimate test for their stuff. That's for sure. But that's excellent. So, how many days now are you sort of going to be in Mumbai before looking to move on?
I'll probably start making some headway tomorrow. Like I said, it's really easy to relax, and my friend's sister kindly put me up for a couple of days, and you're not in a hotel where it feels, you know, very like cold and heartless. Like you're in a home, so it feels very like comfortable, but then it's just like, but I still need to get around the world. So I kind of started picking things, you know, everything's charged up, bike's fully built, brake pads replaced, kind of everything's kind of ready.
And I'm
so looking forward to hitting the road again.
I'm sure, because it's been a bit of a disjointed last few days or week or so, hasn't it, where it's just kind of all over the place.
And like finding a rhythm, like also super broken with sleep, like, you know, going through there's been lots of nights and then super early mornings.
Were you camping quite a bit in Turkey or?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's a good mix because we camped where we could, and then also every couple of days, you know, hotel, wash it, charge stuff up, and then kind of hit the road again for another couple of days. And then, you know, also, you know, before I met Finley, this like really lovely family put me up just outside Istanbul. You know, we met Ian, you know, put us up at his place. So there were times where, yeah, you're actually just like brought in by people, and that kind of provides the exactly what you need.
What is your approach to, like for me, some, you know, a lot of people, you know, just going up to perfect strangers. Have you found, is that something you've always been kind of comfortable, just maybe from your Herne Hill experience, just with, you know, coaching and interacting with people? How have you found that with strange, with the language barrier? I know Google Translate's been your best friend. If you just kind of, you get to the point where, you know, you don't really, not that you don't care what people think, but you just go and ask, you know, you've got nothing to lose, if that makes sense. Is that sort of been more of an approach? Like, how are you meeting these people and ending up in these situations where you're staying at someone's house, you know?
No, I don't initiate it because I'm so nervous and shy with things like that. It's other people coming to you and saying that. So, you know, with with this family in Çorlu, which is this area to the west of Istanbul. I just by chance stopped at their restaurant, and then he was just, you know, you look pretty different. You're riding a bike that's got a lot of bag in it. You're wearing cycling kit. You know, so they're interested. And Ian, you know, the other guy who put us up, he put it in a really good way. Is that, like, Turkish people, they're curious but understanding. You know, it's not like some places where everyone might gather around you or kind of...
Yeah, where it can be quite intimidating.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and that was, like, the perfect description because it's so... I mean, he's, you know, he said he'd been... exploring Turkey for 30 years, he knows the land and the people very well. And they're very curious and they want to know and they want to understand, but their understanding is just like, they kind of give you space to do what you need to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And Adam was very curious and he just asked what I was doing. And then he just asked if I had a place to stay because it was dark and all of that. And yeah, I just took him up on the offer because I'd never initiate that. I'm still so shy. Like coaching is very different because that's rehearsed. You know, you know exactly what you're saying at every point. And to an extent when you're coaching, you're putting on a show for the people that you're coaching. Whereas this isn't a show. This is, you know, completely made up on the spot. And I find that, you know, difficult and nerve-wracking. But it's people just showing you genuine kindness, hospitality and warmth that just puts you at complete ease. Yeah. And that's been the best thing. You know, with Ian, it's just like the most ridiculous chance encounter that, you know, we left this camping spot and, you know, we had breakfast and I just needed to go to the toilet again. So we stopped at like a BP garage and he was just outside at the time because his town doesn't shop, so he had to go down towards the coast, and he asked us, you know, heard our accents, asked us a question, things progressed from there, and then he says, come and see my yoga retreat, come and see my house, if you need a place to stay tonight, you know, you're more than welcome.
Wow.
And it just turned like I almost look back at that encounter with such like just mythical sort of,
yeah, how the universe works sort of thing. Like, how did that, you know, just at that moment, at that time, and it opened this whole new experience from that, you know, the story that attached to that was...
I don't know if you've read Lord of the Rings, and I never finished it, but it almost reminds you of like Tom Bombadil, who was this character in the books, who they meet in the forest, and he's just kind of, yeah, mythical character. And I kind of feel that way about Ian, like, learned so much from him. He had such insane knowledge on the history of Turkey, on the geography, and like when I set out on this, you know, I planned a route that was always rough because, you know, local knowledge is best, and this just like encapsulated that so much,
like this guardian that just, like as you say, in a film or a book, that kind of comes in out of nowhere on a white horse, gives you the knowledge, and then off he go, and then disappears into the mist, but at the same time adding that richness.
And it was so special, the place he told us to go. Like,
was that the climb that you went up to the top?
Yeah, Chowda. You're on a peak where there's enough room for one tent on flat ground before it drops to either side. Wow. And it's at what? About 2,150 meters. No one around. Dead silent. There's a path up because it's so high. There's like a house where someone lives in the summer because they're looking for the forest fires. You know, if they pop up, then they contact someone. But it was surreal because there's this other climb called Babada, which we were going to do, which is slightly higher. And we told Ian we were going to do it. First thing he said, he was like, don't do it. So they're like, it's touristy, it's busy, everyone goes up there. I'll tell you one, you know, 2 kilometers inland, which is even better, and no one's ever heard of it. And that's what you get from, you know, someone who's lived there for 30 years. Crazy. It was, yeah.
And then you got to the bottom and got to the bottom, got offered some free fruit by someone passing by as well. Like, I was just like,
that was the next day.
All right.
And it was really, well, so we met Ian and we went to go and do this climb and we couldn't find the way up. And the locals don't think that you'd want to do a climb like that. So you get your Google Translate, you think, all right, how can I convey, you know, because some things get lost in translation. You've got to phrase things the right way when you're translating, which is another thing that I'm like learning, is like what exact words to use.
Sure, sure.
That you know will translate 100% the meaning they intend it to.
Mm.
And you do that and they just think that you want to cycle on like the main road because you want to get somewhere. And or you know, there are lots of cyclists there, but not to these, like, you know, small villages.
Sure.
So we couldn't find it on the first day, and we were trying to find this climb, trying to find the turning, you know, going on satellite on Google Maps and trying to trace this line, but not knowing exactly if it was the one. And it was very difficult for me, that, because what we'd done was left our bags at Ian's so that we could go and do this climb, go back down, sleep at his, start the next day. And the frustrating thing with that is that for the first time it like really tethered me to a place, you know, thinking like, you know, we're like, okay, we can't find it, we could have carried on and still made some more headway that day, but we'd left our bags, you know, so the only option was to actually backtrack. And that was quite hard to deal with. Yeah. It and it felt like a real loss to kind of lose that freedom that having your life on your bike allows.
No, interesting. Yeah, I can totally understand that's become, as you say, that's your home, right? Proverbial snail with your home on your back sort of thing. And it, for that short little moment, that was kind of interrupted. And then that's why I'm sure, like, even what you're going now with the travel and the planes and the bus, there's this longing, as comfortable as it is in the nice warm home with good food, to just get back up into that rhythm again.
Yeah, but yeah, there's a loss there's a loss of control over what I'm doing, and that was difficult.
I suppose it's finding the balance, isn't it, about the control and not control, and so that you making sure you're still getting the most out of the experience, and it kind of translates to like every day where we worry about stuff, you know, don't sweat the small stuff in a way, because of the benefits of just kind of going with the flow.
It was really tough, that, like, to, because the way I put it to Finley at the time is like, you know, we had like the perfect ingredients for this like amazing cake. Like, we'd met, you know, we'd had a great start to the day. We had a great night before, you know, where we camped, great start to the day, great encounter with Ian, you know, learnt a lot, you know, saw his yoga retreat, saw his home, experienced hospitality, heard about this amazing climb, went to find this amazing climb. And like, we couldn't find it, and it was just so, yeah, that it was just very difficult to deal with. The great thing is that he is such a nice person that we got back, and he clearly could tell that we were really disappointed, so he just said, all right, well, you know, the next morning I've got to go to the town that's just past it, we'll put the bikes in the car and I'll drive, and he said, yeah, he'll just drive us to the exact turn. And I think that was, I don't know if that was just like the fact that he had to go to the town for some papers. I don't know if that was just an excuse for him to help us, because the town that he said was like, it would have been further down the road, but he turned round once we got out to go like the direction back towards his.
Yeah, that's right. So I think he's a little wheelspin, isn't it? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So I think he like, he really wanted to help us, but I think he didn't want us to feel like we were a burden to him. So he, you know, he said, oh yeah, I need to go and do this anyway. And really, I just think he just really wanted to help us.
Amazing.
And he took us there, and yeah, what a climb. It was so good.
Brutal. You guys hid your bags in the bush, didn't you? Just to do the climb and then came back down.
Yeah, God. Because originally Ian said, you're not going to get up with your bags, and that's why we left them at his.
Okay.
And so, you, like I say, there was no one around. Got to the bottom. this guy just, it was so weird. Like, this guy, he just drove past on his motorbike and just beckoned us over and pulled out of his pocket some pears and plums, kind of put as many as he could into my hand and just drove off. It was, yeah, but it's such a special place. The people are so friendly. Like, you stop somewhere and instantly like, oh, do you want some tea? Do you want some chai? It's like, yeah, because the tea is so good. And, you know, it's...
That sweet apple tea they have everywhere, right?
Yeah, yeah, there's that. But the tea and like the glasses, it's such, I don't know, I'm definitely going to get back to the UK, you know, eventually and start making tea and coffee the Turkish way, because honestly, they do it right. They've got it sussed out.
Yeah, and it's such a part of their social fabric as well. I remember being there. It's you know, it's part of their language in a way. I don't know about the Turkish coffee. The Turkish coffee was a bit hardcore for me. it's pretty earthy.
It's so deep and so oaky, and yeah, the whole already I've looked up like, hey, yeah, how do you make it? And because, you know, it's predominantly a Muslim country, so they don't drink. So that tea is, yeah, you know, it's such a part of the social fabric. You know, even when we're getting the taxi to the airport, the guy at the bike shop, you know, called a driver that we could get, you know, both our boxes into, and he came over, you know, first thing is, yeah, have a cup of tea. You know, it's such like a sign of like hospitality and welcome that it's like, it's rude to turn it down.
And food wise, did you end up having a Turkish favorite, something you relied on regularly? What were you guys kind of munching on along the way?
You know, like again, they do coffee right, they do tea right, they do breakfast right as well. Like just big spreads of, you know, cheese, olives, breads, jams, honey, chips as well. And it's like it's like the perfect breakfast for a cyclist, because there's just so much of it, and it's all great. But yeah, did eat like a lot of meat and a lot of kebabs, just because it's like so quick and easy. So I'm very looking forward to not having that here and just having, you know, a lot of dal and veg and rice.
Yeah, exactly. I was gonna say, now it's a new country, new experience, new styles of communication and language. So that's going to be, I'm expecting that, yeah, like you were saying, that in Turkey, how they were interested, but maybe not overwhelming. It's going to be interesting to see now in India, where just by virtue of the number of people, etc., and you are, you know, this blonde person who's not, you know, they don't have a lot of blonde people there, and you're going through. So you'll stick out, and how that dictates what your experience is going to be like.
Yeah. And like, shit, like there's so many people. Like it's, you know, on my way to get some food earlier, it was about like 9:30 on a Sunday night, you know, and it's busier than I've ever seen London. Like Yeah. And like, I get that, you know, Sundays are different here because, you know, Sundays are quieter in, you know, the parts of the world where Christianity was the main religion. And that's not the case here. But yeah, there's so many people. Like, I've just been walking around. Like, it's just aimlessly walking, because there's so many interesting things to see. And yeah, just getting like lost in these massive crowds.
So your plan is, once you start riding, is to kind of get out of the city in a single ride and then sort of find places. Are you going to be camping? What's the situation as far as sleeping rough in India, or is it sort of hostels and things like that?
Yeah, like honestly, I don't really know. Like, I'll have all my things for camping. I'm considering just like, yeah, dropping some things, because food-wise, I don't imagine I'm going to be cooking on the road, because it's going to be so cheap to get such amazing food that it's just not worth my time to, you know, be trying to find pasta to cook on a camping stove when I could get, you know, the best curry I've ever had
just from the side of the road.
Yeah, exactly. So I might leave that behind and kind of spare some weight. I don't think there's really like, or talking to some people, there's not really like camping sort of culture, but imagine they'll be, you know, it's probably used to a lot of travelers around. So I think there'll be quite a lot of hostels, and I'll just ask people. I think someone, like, there might be some places where it's kind of just, you know, lots of individual beds in a huge room that you can sleep at the side of the road and things like that.
It's a storm. You get back to the routine where by the end of the day, you're so tired that you're just like, okay, it's dry. It's warm. I'm going to sleep here.
I'll figure it out. You know, can I stay sitting in this chair in your restaurant all night? Please.
Oh man. Well, okay. So it's definitely feels like it's onto the next chapter as far as where you're at now. You know,
well, like I'm not in Europe anymore. Like even Turkey, like, yeah, you're on the Asian continent, but it still feels European. You know, there are some
more Western.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's some parts, like on the coast, where we rode through. Oh, it was awful. Like, rode through some like tourist resorts. And it's like, this is just like taking so much from, like, the beauty and the history of this country. But like that's not going to be the case over here. Like, I am very far from home. Like, I'll send you a screenshot when I'm off the call. But on the new iOS, you can have a background which is like the earth, and it shows your location on it. And so I've slowly seen that earth like rotate. You know, and now I can't see the UK anymore on that. Like, I'm a long way from home. And
that's crazy. That really kind of hits home when you put it that way. It's a very visual representation of how far you are.
Yeah, and it is kind of like the perfect background that I need for this. But
because it's also showing progress, which I think is important.
Yeah,
that's where it's like you're looking back and. When we were arranging this call, it was like, oh, there's a time difference now. Whereas there wasn't really a time difference before. Now all of a sudden, as you go further and further, just things start changing.
Yeah.
Which is, gives you those signs of progress, which is good.
It's like five and a half hours, I think.
Yeah, the half. I was like, why the half? You know, it's just like rounded up.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, for me, like, it's 10 past 11 for me at the moment. And the city outside the window is still like so awake.
Okay, man. Well, listen, you're probably going to try and get some sleep, and if you're going to think about hitting the road.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be a small day just to ease myself back in.
How is, like, fitness-wise, are you feeling different as far as just feeling stronger, feeling... There were a couple of videos Finley put up where he's just like, he's hanging on there. You're just on the bars dropping watts.
the really weird thing with that is that I can kind of religiously only ride at one speed, and that one speed is just whatever I'm feeling at that time. So, like, riding with Finley, like, you know, he's such a strong rider, and there are times when, yeah, like that morning where I was just like, my body wouldn't wake up, you know. I was riding, and, you know, him being kind of like, all right, yeah, I'll sit in front. I'll go 1 kilometer quicker than we were just going. And, like, I couldn't hold his wheel. And even that small difference, it's like, I can only ride at whatever I'm feeling at that time. And I can't push, like, above or below that. And then that changes so much day by day and, like, hour by hour. As the food you eat, like, you really see how your body works. Because that same morning, you know, the final 30K to Antalya, God, it's like the best I've ever felt on a bike.
It was. Yeah, I remember seeing that video. You were just flying along. But you must be so in tune with your body at this stage, as you say, what you eat, how well you slept, temperature, etc. You're gonna be able to recognize every minute little change and the effect it has.
And fascinating. Yeah, and when it gets to that part of feeling shit on the bike, like, I know that's just the part where you feel shit, and it's like, I'm not afraid that, like, that's gonna last for a long time, or, you know, I don't need to get anywhere, like, quickly, unless now I do because I have a visa with an expiration date. But, like, you know, there's nothing wrong with just being like, yeah, I'm just slow at the moment, And then on the other hand, when you're feeling great and you could like absolutely smash it up a climb with a bike that weighs what it weighs, you know, it's really, it feels great.
Awesome. Well, look forward to the next time we catch up. I suppose probably most way through India or through India. And then would you say you're flying to Hanoi?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So basically I've got, if I leave tomorrow, I'll have about 25 days left on my visa.
Okay.
Get to Guwahati, which is in, there's like a section of India. It's like connected by the tiniest little bit, kind of nestled between Bangladesh, Bhutan, China and Myanmar.
Yes.
So that's where I'll get. Then I'll fly from there to Hanoi. I need to apply for that visa as well.
As you go along. Okay.
But I'm going to ask the good people of Instagram if anyone has any connections there for an address that I can use.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, put it out there. Take advantage of the people watching. I'm sure there'll be so many people who want to, you know, give you a hand where they can. Just to, as you say, to know you have a base if you need to get stuff sent in, etc. Then I'm sure that'll make a big difference. And go from there. Well, as usual, man, we'll keep chatting through the channels, and cheers for the time, and look forward to catching up, you know, in whenever the Wi-Fi suits.
Yeah, wherever. hopefully this is
great. This is calming and easy. I can hear the light buzz of Mumbai in the background, which is the perfect ambience.
Like I said, I did turn off the fan and the AC, so I am starting to sweat a lot.
No, well, you better go and switch all that back on now, man. And I'm sure we'll chat along the way, and look forward to catching up again.
Yeah, man. Great nice to chat. Yeah, see ya. Okay. Bye.
Ciao. And there we have it. The wonderful Boru McCullough, coming to us from Mumbai in India. And I don't know about you, but if you've listened to the first episode and now the second, you really get a sense, or I do anyway, that he's, you know, he's really in it, without sounding obvious. But, you know, he's 7 weeks in now, and, you know, the initial fanfare or the initial emotions, they start morphing, they start changing. It's a different experience. This has become his day-to-day, his life. And I'm fascinated by how that changes or will change his experience. And following along with social media, just seeing Boru's posts and images, you know, every new country is a new experience, a new dynamic, and it leaves a mark, whether that be positive or negative. And then that then in turn affects how the oncoming so-called traffic is going to be interpreted or experienced. So as I said at the top of the show, really looking forward to recording a few more of these episodes with Boru as he makes his way around to document this change and this journey, as well as to offer support, because let's remind ourselves he's also doing this for a very good cause, mind mapping. You know, we'll put links in the show notes to the charity that he is supporting and he's doing so well. And it's something I try and remind Boru, and I think many people remind Boru, just how inspiring what he's doing is to people, myself included. And I'm hoping that in those darker moments, which will inevitably come, as they always do, if anyone's ridden a bike for a certain length of time, you'll know, as I even just saw on this last weekend, you're going to have those ups and downs. And to have a well to tap into of support and an affirmation, I think it can really go a long way. So that's why, do yourself a favor, if you don't already, follow along with Boru, check in, send him those words of support, send him those donations, because I know he checks in on that, and that's a big motivator, knowing that even though you might not hear from everyone on social media, just the action of sending a donation, I think shouts quite loudly in a very positive way. But I hope you enjoyed that. Let me know in the comments section. So that reminds me, if you go to thegraveljunction.com, which at the moment is the podcast page, you can go to the episode in question and actually leave comments at the bottom. So please do that. If you have any comments, questions, or ideas, go to thegraveljunction.com, go to the episode, any episode, and leave a comment, and I can get that feedback. It's something I really look forward to and would like to increase. I'm busy setting up a Discord account, which has been a learning experience in itself, but I really want to create a community-based platform where we can have this dialogue, not just with myself, but with the Gravel Junction community as a whole, starting different topics. And once that's ready, I'll put it out there. Going to go with the sort of 80-20 rule. Spend 20% of my time getting it 80% there, and then we'll mold it along the way. And I welcome your feedback. In the same breath, comments, feedback on the platform where you listen to the podcast. Man, everybody, it makes such a difference. Like, I really, really appreciate any sort of feedback. Give us a rating, help the show get noticed. I've been having so many wonderful comments, and it's really motivating for me. So I thank you for that, for those who have reached out. That's all we have time for today. I'm working on a pretty exciting episode, hopefully for next week. I don't want to say too much because there's a couple things that still have to fall in place for it to come right. But if it does come out, it's one I'm really excited to sort of discover and unpack and then bring to you, the listener. But that's all we have time for this week. As always, thank you for your time. Thank you for your support. And you keep riding. See you next time. Bye for now.